Let's test your microphone, Yoni, just to make sure you're hot.
I think I am. Can everyone hear me?
No.
No? Turn me up.
All right.
There we go. That's better.
There we go. Now we're ready to start. Okay, so welcome to OSP 215. My name is Jeremy Chapman. As you can tell, I'm the guy with the funny accent from Microsoft Corp in the United States. I am joined by Mr. Yoni Kirsch, an Office MVP. Tell us about yourself, Yoni.
Thanks, Jeremy. My name's Yoni Kirsch. I'm an Office 365 MVP based out of Sydney over the ditch, and looking forward to chatting today about Office deployment, specifically click to run.
Great. So I've been working on this click to run stuff. For me, it's the first public outing of all of these things. We've talked to customers a little bit in private quarters. We've also had a few internal conferences, but you guys get the very first dibs on IT Pro content. We're really going to do more of a 300-level session, I would say, today to explain what Click to Run is, because really it's a replacement to the MSI-based setup. It's a permanent install on a computer that all users will have access to, works online with online connectivity, or it will work offline once it's fully cached on the disk. I wanted to talk about for a second, because we got this question certainly on the first day, what is Office 365 Pro Plus versus a volume build of Office, like Office Professional Plus 2013, similar to Office 2010? Well, basically, we are using a new type of activation. It's a subscription-based activation. It means that every user gets 5 different installs of Office. They'll have it across their PCs and also Macs eventually. And that's basically a different paradigm in terms of how we activate. So we're activating now on a per-user basis, but everything still runs local on the computer. What we are optimizing is how fast it will go to that machine in the click-to-run sense. All the MSI stuff still exists. We have, different volume levels going on in the room. All the MSI stuff still exists. You can still install with those technologies, but basically that means that you're going to be tied to the hardware when you install, and your licensing also is tied to the hardware as you're used to in Office 2010. All right. So one thing that's a little bit weird about this machine, Yoni, is that it's actually running Office 2010. One of the cool things now that we have...
Office 21?
Office 2010, yes. It's the old version.
School. Yeah.
The thing that's cool and kind of the point of the session, we can upgrade this machine really quickly.
Oh, really?
And run
this one? Yeah, just Office so you all know, this is the machine that we get provided by the AV guys to run our PowerPoint deck off. We've got all of our own demo machines set up here, but this one doesn't actually belong to us.
So why don't you go ahead and install the new Office, because
do
normally...
Do we have admin rights? Yeah, we do. Let's do it. All right.
So normally an install of Office would be what? I'd have to download source, I'd have to install from a network. It might take me 30 minutes or more. Now basically what we can do is just log right into office365.com, and instead of waiting for a download to happen and then an install to happen, you can log in, grab the installation off the internet, and you'll be able to be up and running typically in under 2 minutes, even with our connections that we have today, which aren't the best connections in the world, but decent. Or you can go to the settings cog up in the corner, either way. So all one right. thing that you'll see here is that we also have what installations are already in play. In this case, we've got a machine that's already got an installation there, and like you see here, we've got 4 installs remaining. Those licenses I can transfer, by the way, from machine to machine. So if I sell a computer, or it breaks, or anything else happens, I can deactivate that old machine and reactivate that license on a new computer. So that's one of the advantages that you get as an Office 365 Pro Plus user, that you'd have the 5 installs that you can mix and match across all the machines that you have. So right now we're literally going to be installing Office on this machine that has only Office 2010 installed, which will show us 2 different things. We will be able to get the install up and running probably in under 2 minutes, plus we don't have to worry about uninstalling the 2010 version of Office. So if I've got highly customized Excel with all my macros and all the things, or COM add-ins or any of those things that I have on there, I don't have to worry about really testing that from a compat perspective, because I can always go back to the old copy if I ever detect anything that does break, and we try our hardest to make sure that things don't break in terms of app compat on the new clients.
Exactly. So this, for me, guys, is really exciting. As an Office deployment guy, I've spent a lot of time watching that bar go from 0 to 100 on Office installs, and Service Pack 1 slipstreamed in there. It takes another 15 minutes. We're about 60 seconds into installing Office on this machine, and it's getting pretty close to being done.
Yeah, so right now what it's doing is, because Yoni was already signed in, It's actually going to connect him to his account as part of the installation process. But what's happening in the background, if you're a setup and deployment geek like we are, you can go in and look at the processes that are running. So this integrated Office process right here is the one that's doing all of the heavy lifting, that's streaming and caching Office onto the disk. And that's the one that's going to be basically running all the install routines, all the update routines, and that's the one that's doing all of the logging and all the work for you. So
here we go.
Now we've already got Office in our start menu. And before, and one of the other things that we're doing, before we're even fully cached with Office, you see we've got like 7% there. Basically what we can do is dynamically prioritize what features need to be streamed in. So in this case, we can put all of our caching effort and all of that muscle behind PowerPoint and stream in all the PowerPoint features. And you get a status here in the corner that shows where you're at. So literally within about 2 minutes, we had no Office 2013 client on this computer. Now why don't we go ahead and close the presentation in the 2010 machine, because we don't need to present from that anymore.
Not that we need to close it. It's on the desktop.
And we will present right from the desktop. So that will open up in the new PowerPoint client. And literally from, we went from 0 to 60, or however you want to call it, 0 to Office 2013 installed. Now we'll be able to do our presentation right from the new PowerPoint client and show everything there. So now, in terms of what we can see in the task manager, well, that's going to open up.
So just to be clear, this is not a web app. This is not some half-featured version of PowerPoint. We have just streamed a copy of Office down onto the computer, and we are working and clicking around and running inside PowerPoint 2013 in the space of about 2 minutes.
Yeah, so not too bad, was it? You got Office installed in 2 minutes?
Come on. Yeah.
All right, so now we are officially on the new build of Office. So let's keep going then and talk about what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
All right, so we saw the new click-to-run install, so we just shaved off potentially an hour of download plus install time that would have been in the 2010, the old 2010 clients, right? Setup customization, we're going to talk about the Office deployment tools for click-to-run. We're not going to talk about things like Office customization tool and the existing tool set for the MSI-based packages. Those are all still there, so if you've been doing software installations with Office customization tool, all of that works in the MSI and the volume license packages, professional plus standard, but we're not going to talk about those here. We're going to look at integration, how those can be actually integrated with things like System Center Configuration Manager, Windows Intune, you name it, Alteryx, all the plumbing is there for unattended installation. What's that?
Batch files,
yeah, we're going to do that.
Deployment mechanism of choice.
So we're using lowest common denominator automation. We're building our own deployment tools up here and going to be showing that like we did earlier on Tuesday. And also software update management. We're going to show how we can control software updates. Because one of the first things that people think are, oh my gosh, this is coming from the cloud and Microsoft's going to push updates upon me. And I don't have time to test them. I won't have time to validate that they're not going to be breaking my stuff.
Well, there goes my 3G quota for the month.
Exactly. So, the 3G quota, exactly. So, basically, we have the ability to turn off automatic updating if we want to. We can make sure that updates all come from our LAN if we want to not have users going out and downloading stuff from the internet. If we want to avoid that, we have time to test our updates. All that we'll talk about and all the different ways we can configure software updates. So,
and we'll do lots of demos.
We'll do lots and lots of demos. All right. So one of the first things that people ask are, geez, this Office is new. Is it going to still work with my old .doc and .xls file formats? We want to make sure that the new Office is just inbox compatible, something that you don't have to worry about testing and you don't have to worry about, you know, in terms of things breaking. You're going to see very, very few things that aren't going to work in the new version of Office. All of the old customization types, models, VSTO, COM add-ins, BHO, ActiveX controls, all that stuff still works. Even in Click to Run, even though it's technically a virtualized app and an app V-like delivery, it's not isolated from all the components that are running locally on the disk, so it can interact with it.
That's a really exciting feature, I think. When you go and start having a look at the preview bits, which I'm sure a lot of you will after we get out of this session, you'll notice something straight away. Or the second you start your click-to-run applications, you'll notice that all your existing VSTO COM add-ins that you've got installed on your Office 2010 or Office 2007 installation on the same machine will automatically be ported over into the click-to-run installation and registered and start the first time. So I think that's quite a step in the right direction to break down some of those help desk calls for, hey, I just upgraded and now I can't get it my Adobe Reader, whatever button plug-in thing. So, yeah.
So those automatically work. So you're going to find very few things that break in terms of existing add-ins and customizations. Consumerization of IT. So one of the things that this model, this user-based activation model, gives you is the fact that if you do a BYOPC type of model where they're bringing their own devices to work and saying, hey, will you load software on this thing? And this is getting more and more popular. You always had a way to load software on that device that was owned by the user, or maybe provision them a remote environment or something, but you never had a way to strip that back off their PC. You could sever connection if it was a remote desktop, but if they want to run that locally, if you're loading a bunch of software on there, especially third-party stuff with perpetual activation,
yeah.
What do you do when they leave the company? You ask them to uninstall, because now your asset management's a bit out of whack, because now you've got a bunch of assets that are sitting on that user's PC. With this model, basically I can deprovision that user, because I manage him, I manage Yoni, for example. Once I kill him out of my AD, if I want to get rid of that object, he then doesn't have access to Office. Then all of his Office clients that he's installing that we've kind of leased him are basically deactivated, and they go into reduced functionality.
So in the same way, if you're on an Office 365 subscription model, if we hit the deactivate button on this installation, then that machine, the Office bits will go into
RFM.
Right.
Yes.
So let me just jump back into our deck there. And look, certainly from an asset management and a software compliance point of view, there's a good story to tell around click to run. But as well as that, you know, you've got if people are doing the BYO device piece, then they're bringing their own devices in. You've essentially got no idea what's on those machines, what version of Office they're running at the moment, what add-ins and customizations they've got. You've now got a really easy method of bringing everyone to a standard bar in terms of what Office platform they're running without having to worry about getting call after call, hey, I tried to upgrade from 2003 to the 2010 build that you gave me and I got this error and whatever else there was. So now they can run side by side and you're not interfering with what people had on their computer to start with either.
Yes, and one of the last things that we always hear, well, in terms of a deployment blocker, it's just going to be easier to do nothing. We'll just stay on XP and Office 2003 and not worry about it, wait until, you know, support ends or whatever. This is one of those pivotal releases where we're actually using the cloud as a back end of this to be able to store data off the machine. All the different additional features, things that you might have seen this week from Michael Atala's session early this week, or our top 10 hidden gems, all that stuff, if you do nothing, even from an IT pro perspective, it's always better to be a bit more visionary, a bit more one foot forward in terms of getting on newer technology, newer tools when you can do it. So,
yeah.
You know, complacency in this case probably isn't the best thing, but, you know, there's always going to be times where you might want to stay on maybe a 2010 build, wait it out, and see if the public is liking this 2013 build. But in this case, we can always go back and we can run both copies side by side. We can evaluate it and make sure everything works before we pull the trigger and deploy it across our organization.
You can kind of have your cake and eat it too from a software management point of view. You can look at leaving the existing Office installation sitting there on the box and then just let them die out by attrition as machines get rebuilt with the new build on there that doesn't have the old Office installation anymore.
Yes, so when we think about how we want to deploy Office 365 Pro Plus, there are a few questions that you'd want to ask. Things like, are my users local admins? So a lot of organizations, they aren't, right? They can't install their own software. In a lot of cases, you don't want them to, especially if they're going to be downloading gigabyte worth of stuff from the internet to go onto their hard disk. You have an option if you're a small business. You can go in and say, okay, Yoni, go ahead and log into this site, pull down Office just like we saw on this machine here, which, you know, will work in certain circumstances. But if I'm a larger managed customer, I'm going to want to deploy all of that stuff from my local area network and have complete control over all of that traffic and bandwidth. If I'm paying by the megabyte and my users are paying by the megabyte, I might want to control all of that in-house to make sure that I've got the traffic management on my side. Also, in terms of software deployment tools, we're going to probably want to use things that we might have, like System Center Configuration Manager, Tivoli, Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, whatever we're doing to put Office down, we're going to want to use those tools. And if I've got application virtualization, anybody have application virtualization? If I've got that, I can even use that for the new Office too. We give you a pre-sequenced package that you can just import directly into the App V console. You don't have to do all that stuff to resequence Office to get it to work. So if you have the deployment tools, use the ones that you have. You can manage it like you would any other app. It's a setup.exe bootstrapper at the end of the day that we're running. But all of that streaming, all of that instant on, all of that 2 minute or less kind of from install to being able to run is all part of the story.
And it still works. And that's the thing that I really like as a deployment guy is that the investments that you've already made in your software distribution technologies, SCCM or whatever it is, are not at all wasted. So you can simply configure the Office bootstrapper to look to any UNC path, SMB share, which in a lot of cases would be your SCCM distribution point, and you can say, hey, don't go and get your updates or do your initial install from the Microsoft cloud. I want you to look at this network location and stream updates from there. So it gives you all the flexibility of the click-to-run streamed install, but still leveraging your existing investment in your software distribution system.
So part of what comes with that then is this user-based licensing concept versus perpetual. For a lot of people, they're going to love it because now you can do operational costs, operational expenses, as opposed to, you know, common asset management back in the day where you're, not back in the day, but even currently, where you're depreciating that asset down over a period of a few years. Now I can actually assign Yoni a technology fee if I wanted to from an accounting perspective, and we're basically paying that technology fee in order to give him access to Office, and then once he leaves the company, we can strip that away. So if I've got seasonal workers or people like that are coming in for a couple months for, say, the Christmas holidays or tax season or whatever, I can easily give them access to Office and easily take that away just as easily once he leaves my org. So very cool stuff there in terms of how we can rejigger the way the activation works and basically perpetual versus subscription. Plus, they get rights to Office on all their devices, eventually even their mobile devices, their Macs at home, all those things that basically it accrues to a benefit for them to be an employee in your org. What that also means, though, is that we need to have a way for that guy to authenticate and validate into that service so he can actually do the install or he can actually activate his product, whether it's on his phone or whether it's on his Windows or Mac, Windows PC or Mac. That means that instead of having just a KMS service, like a key management service running on our premises, we're going to have that user be able to log into something with some form of credential. So I'm not going to go into all of the identity management types here, but you can do things as secure as federating Active Directory, so you can use multi-factor auth and all those things. Keep your same passwords, same domain creds, all the way down to, you know, list imports and having separate passwords and usernames mastered in the cloud. So there's a bunch of different options there. Again, depending on what fits you best from an org size.
And not to forget, we've got a kind of enterprise business crowd here, but there's also a consumer model for this as well, right?
Sure. So in consumers, it's going to be cool because they can go into the store and they can buy a subscription which basically services their whole family. If they've got five PCs in their house, which I actually have at my house, then you could go and install them on all of those PCs. It belongs to you. As long as you have that subscription running, then you get actually access into Wave 16 and 17 and 18 of Office as long as you continue to be a subscriber. So
after the release, I go down to Harvey Norman. Do I get a box with some disks in it?
No, you won't get optical media this time. You'll actually just get a URL to download. You can request optical media, and we'll send it to you for shipping and handling or something. But you don't need optical media because we're streaming this right from the web. It's actually going to install way faster in that case than it would if it was running from the terribly low bus speeds of optical media and a DVD. So we're getting past the DVD days of installation. So why don't we show what this looks like in a more scalable way? We'll go ahead and run. Actually, no. Let's go through a couple of points between the two. So in terms of MSI versus click-to-run, MSI, again, can take 30 minutes or more, even more if it's over network share. Click-to-run is about 2 minutes like we saw earlier. MSI was the basis of Office deployments. Office actually owned the Windows installation package format, MS.MSI format. We gave it to Windows back in the old Office 2000 days to continue using and to actually broaden out across the industry. So we're doing the same thing here, essentially, with click-to-run. We think that there will be demand in terms of having that install type, especially for bigger apps, think of Adobe Photoshop or some of the larger ones that need this type of installation. We see more and more people in the industry will go that way. Even Adobe Reader these days is using a form of virtualization to install that application as well and service that application as well. MSI, as I mentioned, will still be part of the VL offer. So if you've got Office Professional Plus 2013, that will still be a VL.msi set of packages with the normal setup bootstrapper that you're used to.
You're not going to use it, though.
Office 365 is the only way to get into Click2Run and all the different consumer SKUs, but it is the primary install type that we have for the new Office. Device-based activation, which, by the way, has some valid areas where you're going to use it. Shared computers, Windows to Go, for example, needs device-based activation. And if I've got a remote desktop session host installer, if I'm using Citrix XenApp, those types of things will require the MSI. Mm-hmm. Also, in the past, MSI was the only thing that was highly customizable per device. In Click2Run version 1 on Office 2010, as you might have found out when you got Office Starter on a PC that you bought, I couldn't add add-ins. I couldn't do all that stuff that I would normally do on an MSI-based install. All of that now works with Click2Run. So we've basically added extension points into the virtual app package and use something called just-in-time virtualization to get all those things to run. We'll explain what that looks like in a bit. So even though we're using AppV as part of all of the implementation of this, it doesn't require that you have AppV infrastructure or buy AppV in order to use Click2Run. Basically, the setup itself contains all of the virtual file handling, all the virtual file system components in there as part of the setup, and that's going to be part of just the standard install. Even if I buy it at Harvey Norman or if I download it from office365.com, either way, it's going to be inclusive of those AppV components. And it can go side by side with AppV if you do have AppV used with 4.6 or version 5.0 of AppV for other apps. All right, so now we need to show what this looks like on a bigger stage with some scale. Yoni's going to give us a look at side-by-side and Click2Run install and all those different topics. So,
thanks, Jeremy.
Go ahead.
So let's just switch over to our big beast of a machine here. Those of you who weren't in the office session yesterday morning, we had a look at this machine as well. This is Jeremy's pride and joy. He's brought this all the way from Redmond with him. So what we have here is a big, hefty workstation HP EliteBook. I think it's got something like 32 gigabytes of RAM in it and 1.2 terabytes of Intel SSD storage in RAID 0.
They're striped, right? Yeah. So it's got a pretty good IOPS spec on it.
Big i7 in it. So anyway, so basically the goal of this machine was to be able to show you the scale of how Click2Run works and how it behaves in comparison to previous installers in the 2010 version of the product. So you've already had a bit of a peek of this when we hacked into our speaker's laptop here and got that going. So I'll just kick this off again.
And right now what's happened is I've actually got a configuration XML that's instructing it what to do. It's going in and parsing all those values, and that's why you get a little bit of a pause before we're going to get our catalyst screens in terms of Office setting itself up.
So probably while this is going, it's a good time to explain for those of you thinking about how your deployments are going to look in your production environments. You can have the user interaction going on here. Alternately, you can mute that and run it in silent mode. Was there a question? Okay. So you do have the options, and we're going to go through the syntax of the configuration file a little bit later on, and you'll see that you can configure that either with the user interaction or without it. In this case, we've got it turned on because otherwise it would be a very boring demo looking at a desktop.
So right now what kind of happens as part of the install is for the first 10% in the progress screen, we're basically laying down all the virtual file system stuff, all the AppV-like components into the program files folder. You'll see that unlike Office 2010, Click2Run, the old starter edition, we don't make a Q drive anymore, so there's not that mysterious Q drive that people will call the help desk for and say, hey, I got the 6 gig Q drive I can't read or write to. What the heck is it?
Should I change the permissions on that drive?
Yeah, all those things. So basically, you know, everything's self-contained in the program files folder, and we even take all the shared components, and I'll show you that in a second, in the file system, and leave all of those inside of program files. Even the x86 goes into program files, which is a little bit different. But all of the, you know, shared components, the shared common files, all the things that would be in the program files directory that shared DLLs, those all stay sandboxed within the Office directory. That means that I can have different versions of Office run without any collisions or conflicts between those two different versions that are on there.
And if any of you have had a go at sequencing Office 2010 using AppV, you probably have a desire to have that behavior because, as you will know, there has in the past been a lot of juggling required to figure out what version of what Office applications need to go on a machine if you want them to coexist with each other. So anyway, you can see our Office 2013 applications are sitting there. And just to give you a bit of a comparison, what I'm going to do is I'm going to kick off an installation of Office 2010 with Service Pack 1, and this is the full MSI build. And you can see here that this also with this installation, we have to wait for the Install Now button to come up, which takes a bit more time as well. So let me just go ahead and kick that off. And you can see that this is now going to go and run a full installation of Office 2010. Pretty cool considering that we have Office 2013 already loaded on the box side by side. So anyway, so what else do we have here? Let me just get out of that.
It's zero.
Yeah. Okay. So what we have here is another bunch of virtual machines.
15, another 15. It's Office 15. Yes.
Right. Virtual machines, and we've configured these with the BG Info tool from Mr. Mark Rasinovich, and it's showing us that there's different versions of Office on each one.
So why don't we go ahead and kick off the install? Why don't we go kick off the install in the start computer?
Yeah.
We have to move that thing to the side.
Out of the way.
And now I've got just a little script that will tell those machines to start installing the Office 15 clients. Go ahead and look in some of those just to prove that there is no Office 15 client installed.
Absolutely. So there's nothing in here. This one we can see has Office 2007 running on at the moment. And if we have a look, say, at one of these ones here, we've got
and we can even
Office
launch.
2003. We can launch an Office application while this is going on. That's no problem at all.
We'll just go ahead.
That's okay.
Say no.
But
on
it's
that
sitting
one.
There anyway, right? We've got a 2010 install that's sitting here. And I'm just going to flick back over, and you'll see this one has 2010 running on it.
There we go.
If we jump back to our big screen here, you'll see that all of these machines are now starting to kick off their click-to-run installs. So this is all streaming down real time, and we can have a look as the machines go along that they're running the same click-to-run install that our initial machine was running.
So this is basically showing I can install side by side with an existing copy of Office. It's not upgrading that copy of Office. It's going to still work in tandem with it. In fact, when we're all done, I'm going to have the background changed with BG Info and show that the new Office is running alongside the previous version that's on those machines. Even while I'm working as an end user, my IT admin can push Office down to the machine. So I can have Outlook running, which I think most people do kind of all day long. And I can get that new copy of Office installed. And even with Outlook, one of the cool things is we can reuse the PST and OST files if we want to. And like Yoni said, we'll pull in all the configurations on that Outlook 2007 or 2010 install. So you just have to go through that initial setup experience from Outlook, or you don't have to build PRF files and those types of things in order to get the profile populated, because it's already there. We just pull it all from app data. We've got all the mappings of their PSTs already there. OST file, if we use it, there's a group policy that's on TechNet. I don't have it memorized off the top of my head, but there's a group policy that you can set to reuse even the OST. So if you've got 10 gigabyte OSTs everywhere, that's obviously going to choke your network to have those things all get rebuilt across the board. So basically you rebuild that OST, don't worry about that extra bandwidth and that extra traffic to build those things, and you've got the ability, if I want to, even on Outlook or all the other apps, Word, PowerPoint, Excel, run them side by side. With Outlook, I can run one version at a time because I can only have one of those with a handle open to the Outlook data file, but I can run them side by side if I close one version and open the other. In terms of side by side, we can do 2003 and newer, so any supported version of Office is what we support. Technically, though, if you've got an older version of Office than that, there's nothing stopping you from using side by side. We just don't officially test it or support it because those products aren't in support anymore, but they should all still work.
And I think you touched on something as well from a configuration point of view. That's quite functional, that when we put these click-to-run installs down, all the users' settings and configurations, not just from Outlook, but from all the Office applications, the click-to-run Office 2013 install is actually going to find those and translate them into the new Office installation, which is pretty cool.
So I think all of our installs are finished now. They're all runnable now. We've got our 2010 package at about 50%, and we've just done 16 installs of Office in way less time than we could have done.
So if I jump onto this machine, we'll see that we've got both our Office 2010 installation sitting there and our 2013 application sitting side by side. If I've jumped back into the machine that we were working on here,
just close that
activation
guy.
Wizard, we've got our Word running from that one.
And even though Word was running, we were able to lay down a new copy of Office, the entire suite.
At the same time.
Yeah, so not too bad, right? That's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so let's keep going because we're We're going to get through a lot of content here in this session, so let's go back to our PowerPoint. All right. So what did we do behind the scenes? What are kind of some of the design goals that we had around the installation? So back with application virtualization, what happens is you've got feature block 1 and 2. Feature block 1 is about 5% of the app that lets you boot and load the app, and then while that's booted, it then caches all the feature block 2 in the background. This works perfectly well for a 10 megabyte line of business app that, you know, isn't 700 megs in the size of Office. Of course, Office is a bit larger. I won't make any animal references, but it's a bit larger. And basically, I've got to take that 700 megs and I've got to slice that into modules. So we've actually got about 1,800 modules that we slice Office into. And when we're doing the install, we look at what are the components that are on the system already. If nothing, then load everything. If there's something there, we only have to update the existing, the ones that are different from what's already there. So what we had to do was basically take the feature block 2, cut that into 1,800 features. I've got 9 here for simplicity's sake. While I'm running the app for the first time, and you saw it on this PowerPoint install, we can actually dynamically reprioritize the queue as to what features get loaded. So we've got people, usually college students, that come in. We test how they're going to be using Office, and we have our own queue of how we're going to load the features and the modules. If they decide to stray from that, the first thing they want to go into is do mail merge or, you know, build an access database with a bunch of weird stuff.
Run a PowerPoint presentation.
Run a PowerPoint. We can assign all of the resources against that PowerPoint presentation, against the features that they're actually using. Those things will be the first things in the queue then, and his installation queue will be reprioritized based on his actual usage. We also then have the ability to integrate with local apps. Like I mentioned earlier, if you install Office with App V 4.6 or you have the Office Starter Edition, there's no add-in support. There's no way to customize that. If I have a App V install of Office 2010 and I decide to install PowerPivot.exe, it won't even see that Office is there. It won't install. If I force it and do like a transform file against the thing and force it down, it won't run because at runtime it's not going to detect Office is there. So you need to have the integration against things that are on the metal in order to talk to that application. So we actually built in local app integration, which is probably the biggest, you know, new part of App V that we're introducing with this release, and it's also part of application virtualization version 5.0. We do enough, even though we're integrating with the system, we're writing, you know, we do about, I'd say if you run process monitor against Office and install, we're doing about 1.3 million things in terms of all the registry read writes, all the file copies, everything that we're doing. So we are pretty much installing like a normal app would install on the system, but it's installing via kind of a file copy as opposed to doing the traditional MSI, you know, declarative framework install. We do enough virtualization, enough isolation in order to enable side-by-side, which I will show you in a second how that works. Now, in terms of app compat, we know that side-by-side isn't the only way you're going to attack that. Obviously, it's a benefit that you get out of this model. But we also have a bunch of tools that we've updated, and I showed that on the session yesterday. Our telemetry dashboard, our telemetry log, so all of the products are now instrumented for telemetry to modify performance, to enumerate all of the different add-ins I have, and I can do that in terms of a central organizational view, a dashboard of everybody's PC on my premises and be able to look at any performance issues they have, and I can use that same type of technology against an Office 2003, 2007, or 2010 install, but the Office 15 clients are natively inclusive of telemetry features.
And I think those features are going to make a big difference to the speed with which people are comfortable moving Office 2013 out into their environments. So if you missed our session yesterday morning, I would encourage you to go and download the recording of that and review what we talked about with the telemetry features there.
And if you run a help desk, it's the only way to really triage if this is something that more than the guy who called you is experiencing. I can see that issue and say, okay, well, 10,000 other people are experiencing that. I better go fix it. If it's only Yoni and he's one of those really pedantic guys who's got one little error, then I can basically ignore him and wait till somebody else calls on that issue. But here I can go in and look inside of Excel and find out if more people are affected and then triage that accordingly and fix it if I need to. So what we're trying to do with all of this is basically say that between our telemetry investments and side-by-side and all these things that we're doing, we want to take that period that a lot of people spend in terms of enumerating all their apps, doing discovery, trying to test stuff, looking through all of what they have, you know, the inventory, triage, testing, fixing, all of that process, and say, okay, don't worry about all that. Things are going to work natively anyway, and you don't have to worry about, you know, making sure that things are completely compatible. You've tested all the million files that you have in your inventory. You can literally throw Office out there, the new version, because I've got the old version running alongside of it. I can wait for my help desk to ring, as counterintuitive as that sounds for a lot of people, if you actually, you know, follow, say, Chris Jackson's blog or any of the people that do app compat work for Office exclusively for a living, if you think about how much cheaper it is, like if I've got 5 things that break out of 1 million files, it's going to be easier to wait for the help desk to ring than to try to test all 1 million files. Let's say it's $1 a file. That help desk call might be $100 per call. That's $500. But a million times $1 to test the file is going to be way more expensive. So there's a whole math behind that.
And you know what? Without exception, every single time we went into a large organization, a bank, financial institutions, you name it, to go into proactive investigation and inventorying of files for Office 2010 or 2007 compatibility, every single time the net result was, when we did all the scans, we analyzed all the data, the net result was that the instances where there would be issues were so disparate and so hard to nail down that it was going to be cheaper to wait for them to break and then let people call the help desk and fix them on a case-by-case basis than it was to go and try and find every Word document or every Excel spreadsheet that had some funky macro in it that was going to fail.
Exactly.
Every single time. So
again, side-by-side, it's an aid. It helps you transition. It's not going to be the perpetual thing that you're going to want to run, so eventually you're going to want to wean people off of the older Office build and get them to run the newer one so you don't have two apps doing the same thing. So not recommended as a permanent configuration, but it's something that you can use to help transition to the new version. So we're not just, a lot of marketing guys will say, hey, side by side, it solved all problems, it's cured world hunger, all those things, but actually it's something that you want to use just for a few months as part of your transition.
You can also let it go via attrition. You can put the new Office installation into your OS deployment.
Our MSI is still chugging along, by the way.
Hasn't even started installing Service Pack 1, has it?
We'll see if it finishes by the time we're done with the whole session. All right.
Right. So yeah, what I was saying is you can put your Office 2013 bits into your OS deployment image when you're ready, and then you can run your click to run side by side environment, and as machines get rebuilt either through, for whatever reason, refreshes or people get their PCs replaced, then those older installations can slowly get out of your environment as well.
So side by side. So on this system and on all those systems, you saw that we had two different versions of Office. Let me go into a bit more depth as to what those types of things look like. So here I've got Word, the new version running side by side with the old one, so you've seen that. Part of what we're going to see in terms of the file systems, here I'm in Program Files x86, looking at Office 14 and what gets installed there. Now if I go and look at the Office 15 install, there's hardly anything there. So I've got a 32-bit click-to-run install. Basically only licensing stuff is in that folder. But even though it's a 32-bit install that I have of Office, it's actually in the Program Files folder, so not Program Files x86, as you would expect it to be. And when I look at Office itself, it's a completely different animal in terms of what it looks like compared to that Office 14 install. Where all of the bits are, basically this is all of your AppV set of components, all the things that integrate the virtual file system, that's what's happening there. If I go into the root folder, then I'm going to see my actual Office 15 set of files where all the exes are to launch from. That's where you're going to see things like excel.exe as we see here and all that stuff. So we have basically, and let me go back to the root folder, in the virtual file system, we've got all the shared DLLs, all the shared components, the common files, common programs, things that we'd have in the Program Files or Program Files x86 folder that have shared DLLs all throughout here. Even the Windows shared DLLs we can pack in there and have various items that we need in terms of running Office in isolation from other versions of Office. So again, very cool piece of engineering, making sure also that we don't have a mysterious Q drive to install this in. Now part of this as well is kind of what the different installer packages look like. So the way I like to say it, we're not in Kansas anymore. We have a completely different set of files. Here we have the MSI-based 2010 installer, which looks roughly like the MSI for 2013 as well. But click to run, basically everything is here in my xnun.dat file that I have. And that's where all of Office is contained. And the multilingual user interface package, the MUI, is basically the dat file right above it. And I can have as many different dat files as I want there. And I can configure what gets installed, what gets downloaded. So in terms of just the file system itself, it's completely different from the MSI package, but shares obviously all the different components that you're used to once it's fully installed and cached on the system. So that was a brief explanation of kind of what side-by-side looks like, and we'll go in a bit more depth in terms of the deployment tools here in a second, and I'll go back to this and show you what you can do to configure stuff. All right, so how we're doing all of the local integration is basically we're doing something called just-in-time virtualization. Most of our customizations are through MAPI DLL. We can pull in through our extension points any normal COM add-ins, any of the ActiveX controls that might be there, BHOs for URL redirection, all that stuff is integrated right in. Even though it's a virtual package, we've basically got holes in that virtualization bubble in order to pull all those customizations in as if it were installed like the MSI. And the important thing is, if you've got something like software distribution, or if you are afraid that people shouldn't be downloading a gigabyte of stuff per person from the public internet, this is something where you can avoid all of that. Download the Office package into your system center or other software distribution environment.
A DFS share would do.
Configure it however you want. All the streaming then happens from your network and not from the cloud or from the public internet. So that's stuff that you can control. You have an XML file that you can configure in terms of how Office is laid down. Plus, you can use group policy for about 4,000 other configuration controls there as well. And I can do things like layer on my add-ins. I can do other customizations if I need to on top of that with a task sequence or some other dependency chaining and config manager, et cetera, to get other add-ins loaded as well. So all those things are supported just like they would be in the MSI. So we saw click-to-run self-installation, but basically log into the portal, sign in, install the latest version, and it streams directly from the internet. So that's one way to skin the cat, but we already showed this one, so our self-install experience is done. We have another way that we can consume Office called Office On Demand. So on any computer, this is not a permanent install. On any computer, I can log in with Windows 7 and newer, and basically here we've got a virtual machine that we've got logged in with no Office client that we'll show. Just do control. You do this?
Yeah, for sure.
There we are. We can log into our Office 365 site on any internet-connected Windows 7 or Windows 8 machine, unlimited in terms of the number of usages, and we can basically have the ability to run Office, the full version, as opposed to just the web apps. That's on 5.
Yep. I was going for this one. So just have a quick look. How's our Office install doing over here? So we're still running Service Pack 1 over there on our 2010 build. All right, you ready for this one, Jeremy?
We are ready. So let's go over to Office On Demand. So again, this can run on any PC we want. So here I'm on my Contoso IT machine. It shouldn't today have any Office install already pre-existing. If you were at the session yesterday, it did. We did a fast uninstall, which is another great feature, is how fast you can uninstall stuff. Now I'm going to go into account planning, a Word doc, and that should be opening here. There we go. And normally it's going to open in a web app, and we're going to see a Word web app. But now I've got the ability, since there is no Word client on there, I can use Edit in Word. Typically what that would do is go into my Word 2007 or whatever client that's handling the .doc or .docx file association. And what I can do here is actually open up that document, and what it's going to do is stream down, using the same click-to-run-like streaming, a copy of Word onto my machine. You saw there was no prompt for elevation. I can do this as a local, as a standard user, not a local admin. So I can do this on any PC that I want, unlimited number. I can go to my mom's house, use this Office On Demand feature, and it downloads and installs the whole version of Word in this case. And I can edit my files with all of the functionality of Word.
But then you leave at the end of the day, and poof, it disappears. So like, I've been going to my customer's sites and saying, oh, there's a computer on the desk that they've assigned me. I might just load up my SharePoint site and click on a document, and then I can use the full version of Word 2013 to have that really high fidelity document creation editing experience, and know that at the end of the day, that's just going to go poof out of my profile and disappear.
So typically within about 30 to 60 seconds, and here we're seeing that here, we're going to be able to stream a full copy of Word. There we go. It will open my document. It will sign me in as it's doing now to my account. So I've got my most recently used docs. All that stuff is there. And there's the file that I had in the Office web app. But now I've got all of the full feature set, all the functionality of a full Word client now running on this local user profile. And again, once I log out and disconnect, my files will stare off to the SharePoint online site, so they're all safe. And the copy of Office removes itself, and there's nothing written. I can even go into the start menu. There's nothing written in the start menu like you'd have with a normal app install, because it didn't really install. It just copied everything into the user profile, and I'll just show you.
And the cool thing is, if you've got Office 2013 click to run with a full click to run install on your primary machine, all of your user settings, your recent documents, even what page you were up to in a document that you were reading gets stored back up
all
the cloud.
All that stuff roams with you.
And then you do a Office on Demand install down onto some other machine, and you'll notice all your settings are still sitting there in the install.
So everything's here, as I mentioned, in the user profile folder, the user that's logged in. It goes away when I log out. So pretty cool stuff that lets me use Office on any Windows 7 or Windows 8 internet connected machine that I might be logged into.
That'll work from SkyDrive.
It'll also work if I've got a private subscription. So I've got to have a home subscription to Office 365. That will also let you use Office on Demand with a normal consumer SkyDrive, or if you have a managed SkyDrive Pro,
yeah,
which is basically the new name for my site, then that also works from SharePoint Online or SkyDrive Pro.
But if you have a Office subscription that's attached to your Windows Live ID as opposed to an Office 365 business or enterprise subscription, then yes, you can go into your personal SkyDrive and you can hit a Word document and it'll stream an on-demand Office install down onto any machine you like. And just to be clear, there's an unlimited use on that. You could run around all day clicking on Word documents from your SkyDrive if you wanted and pull bits down onto
every
machine.
You could do it on 1,000 machines a day if you had the time.
You would not be breaching any user license or anything.
So. Exactly. So we saw the Office on Demand demo. So just to compare what all these things are, because this is where a lot of the confusion lies. The click-to-run install is a permanent install, as like the MSI install. The only thing that really differs between the two are the packaging types and the way that licensing works. So on an MSI install, it's perpetual. It runs as a hardware-based license. If I go on click-to-run, it is a user-based license that's basically checking every day to see if my status has changed as an active user. If I leave my organization, I got fired, then my IT admin and my former boss, everybody's going to want to cut me out of the system, and they can put all of my Office apps into RFM. So basically, there's a scheduled task on every client that goes and checks for validity of that account. If that account shows up as not being there anymore, then we can reduce the client functionality to be just readers at that point, because now that lease to the software has expired because he's no longer in my org. This Office on Demand thing is only a temporary install. Again, this is something that I can use on any number of PCs. I've got 5 installs I can use for click to run, or I can do infinite installs on Office on Demand, but those things will clear themselves off the system automatically after an hour of non-use, essentially, of all the Office executables, and all of my things like long-term file caching, those types of things get turned off, and all my data gets stored back into the cloud.
Hey, I forgot we have swag. So someone just asked a good question. So here you go, an Office T-shirt. Nice catch.
And we've got some nice mugs up here too. So
ask some questions.
We probably should.
Yeah.
So speaking of questions, do we support the Office customization tool with Click to Run? I said this earlier in the very first slide. You had a 50-50 chance.
You were all wrong.
The guy in the back row raised his hand because I heard yes happening multiple times. So why don't you go ahead and give him something in the back row there, coffee mug. We've got some BMWs to give away today as well. So in terms of what we support in the MSI-based customization, we can do group policy, config XML, and Office customization tool. But when we get to click to run, we only have a group policy, the set of settings. I shouldn't say only, because there's 4,000 of them.
Yeah.
But basically, all the stuff that OCT does is basically group policy under the hood and a couple of things like create PRF files, which we don't really want people to be doing anyway. So you can do those things. I can still use PRF files, by the way, if I use outlook.exe commands to do that, if I have to recreate them. So we've got config XML, group policy to customize the way that click to run gets laid down. So let me show you what those different tools look like on my computer again. So for that, I will go over to my own personal computer and get into my main operating system. And we will go into the Office deployment tool directory. So the Office deployment tool itself, in terms of tools, it is a setup.exe that has a couple of commands that it can do. As any good IT pro, I've got my cmtrace.exe sitting there and my setup.exe from the Office deployment tool. This you can download now, by the way, from
TechNet.
From the Download Center.
Yeah.
Actually. And I'm going to open a command window here and just show you what the Office deployment tool does. I think the Office deployment tool has a little bit fancier name than it probably needed because all it is a bootstrapper. They can do a couple of things. I can download Office bits. I can I can configure or install, update, and remove Office with the configure switch, and the packager switch in the future will be used to create pre-sequenced appv packages for Office.
If you're a deployment person, then this one file is really the only one that you need. You can create your own config XML files, and this is the one tool you need to download bits to be loaded onto your distribution points or whatever you're doing. It's also the same bootstrapper that's used to actually run the click-to-run install itself.
Pretty much. So we're going to do a download of source to show you what that looks like, but here's my configuration as to what I'm going to download. I can add as many languages here. Right now, we only support English, Japanese, and Spanish for the beta, but that will have all full language support when we get to RTM. I can determine which products I want to download, Visio and Office 365 Pro Plus, as I have in this example. And when I actually run that that download command, I'll just run setup again. And basically what that's going to do is it's going to download Office, because I didn't dictate a source path. It's going to download it right to its folder where its setup is being run from. And we'll see that we have this brand new download happening. It's on September 6th, so it's the one from today, and I've got the RTM build. A couple of files that are important. This cab file is determining what the most up-to-date version of Office is. So when we'll talk about updates later, but when we want to determine what the most recent published version of Office is, we basically interrogate that cab file, and based on that, we'll install from either of the source directories that we see here. So we look at our Office source. Right now, we're still downloading this major enus.dat file, so nothing has appeared yet in that folder, but once it does, it will look like this directory here that I showed you earlier in terms of all the different cabinet files, all the different dat files that we'll download.
So Jeremy, back in our office in Sydney, we've got an SCCM advertisement running a command that looks very similar to that, and it's just got a recurring advertisement that's running every day. So each day, our SCCM server goes off and it downloads the whatever latest build is advertised in the Office cloud, and it pulls it down into a package that then gets pushed out to our distribution points. And so what that means is that for us, at least, we're happy to take the builds as they come, but we're staging them through our distribution capability.
Yep. So once we're ready to install, we can do a couple more things in the config file. Again, imagine you're using software distribution or scripting to install like we did here on this computer. We're defining the source path as to where the Office bits are stored. We're also looking at the product ID, the languages we want, and that will determine what language gets installed. By default, by the way, if you've got all the languages in your packet, it's going to try to match the OS shell language. Here, in this case, I can, if I want to, turn off automatic updates, like I mentioned earlier. I can do things like accept the EULA on behalf of users, as you'd imagine, for any silent install, and turn off the display level so I can get rid of all of that red screen with all the different dialogues and all that Ubi out-of-box experience stuff that you saw earlier. And I can determine where logs are stored, so log path as well. Those are just some of the basic commands there. But that's going to basically control how the installation works, and that's what I was doing on this computer with the 15 different installs running simultaneously, is using that tool to customize how Office was laid down.
Damn. We had a question, quick one?
Yeah, in the example about SCCM and click to run, do you need an internet connection? You must go out to...
No, only...
For the subsequent PC installs, or for the SCCM server to download.
This one's not connected to the internet. Activation does need, the activation is the only thing that will need a PC or an internet connection. But I can lay Office down without activating it.
So you can't use KMS?
There's no KMS support. That's only on the VL and MSI packages. So that's where the user base licensing, and that's the one piece that you can't put on premises, is the activation service.
So there's no way to do it. So currently you could do a Mac and bring up the phone and get activated that way. That's not possible.
No, you'd have to have a valid user account. You sign in once, it PIDs the Office install, and it's done from there on out, and it's going to check for your account status. If you were fired from the org, then we can remove you from that. But there's no KMS-like service or perpetual activation in click-to-run. Sure. There's going to be, that's a good point. There's going to be a lot of mixing and matching. There are going to be some perpetual mixed with user-based licensing. It's going to be kind of par for the course. If I'm doing Citrix and RDSH or Windows to Go or any of that other stuff, that's going to need an MSI-based install as well, because it's perpetual and it's machine activation, which on a shared computer or like a Windows to Go stick that's binding itself to the hard drive, the activation, I need that type of install anyway, because otherwise in a retail-based activation, every time I plug that stick into a different computer, it's going to de-arm or disarm itself and need to be rearmed. And after 6 logins, that will get very annoying for the users going from machine to machine. So we don't recommend it there. Good question. You get some swag.
Another one up the back.
All right, so let's have a look at all the different controls that we have in terms of our Office deployment tool. So what it does, it's free, it's on the download center right now. It downloads and installs and applies software updates or uninstalls Office. Some of the commands that we have, and I'm not going to go into all this because we don't have time to go into all these things, plus it is a very involved set of commands that we have, mainly add the product, the source path. If we're downloading, that's where we download to. If we're installing, that's where we're installing from. The client edition was the bitness of Office, the language that we're going to lay down, and the version optionally there if we don't want to use the most current version. Likewise,
you can download the slide deck later and get it this, and that's all come straight off.
Likewise, off the on the install, a lot of the similar types of properties. Now, there are some additional things that we need to do if we're going to do things like downgrade to a earlier version. So let's say I've rolled out the newest update and we found some compatibility issues. I can actually go to an earlier version if I want to. I just have to use this this force downgrade property, and basically that will allow me to go to a version that's older than the one that I have currently installed. So we have rollback also built into that, and obviously in the display that we saw earlier, we can use this to get rid of that out-of-box experience and all the different...
And we can just silently push an older version down if we need to.
Yes.
We had another question from Mr. Abvi. How do you know if the setup is finished? With the display level.
This is actually a good question. He deserves. I think I can give him a BMW for that
one.
This was a DCR that I actually submitted into engineering. We had the problem when we're doing MDT installs because setup actually exits on a normal click to run install from say the cloud install before it's fully cached, which is problematic if I'm say installing from an MDT local deployment share and it cleans itself off the machine before as the task sequence ends. So we said, okay, let's wait until Office is fully cached. If we're using this deployment tool, this setup.exe I just showed you, it's going to wait until all the bits are fully cached on the machine before it exits. It's going to exit with a normal exit code 0, send that status back to whatever tool's running, in my case MDT or System Center, Intune, whatever you got, and it will look like a successful install. So that setup is technically different from the setup that we just showed in the very first install we did on the presenter computer.
So if you're running from the Office deployment tool, then it will sit there, and essentially, even though the icons will appear on the user's start menu, new Beamer for you.
So the
icons will appear, but your advertisement will keep running until the bits are fully streamed.
And if you're on a task sequence based deployment, it's going to wait until everything's fully cached before it moves to the next task. So this is just showing what it looks like on MDT. Don't worry, you're not going to have to watch a full Windows installation. In fact, I might just fast forward it to the
We're really running out of time here.
We are getting very close. But once I'm fully installed, this is actually a good spot. MDT will do all the install for us, but the user does have to log in one time to do the activation. He's got to PID his activation with an activation key once, and once he's done that, he's good to go.
Unless you were federated and you could get the...
If you're federated, then it's going to read your domain creds right off the machine if you're domain joined and you've got an ADFS connection back to the identity store. Yes, that's the one exception. We showed this the other day, but basically I can do the same thing. Here's just a Windows Intune-based deployment, which looks like any other software distribution tool in terms of how it's done. But basically, I upload the package. In this case, what we can do this with MDT or System Center as well, is we can call into the Office deployment, the delivery network, the content delivery network, the CDN, and download and stream Office right from the cloud if we want to. For some people, that's good. Like in the U.S. where we've got, pharmaceutical people that never go into the office and never have a good pipe back to their systems management and management network, this is something that you can do to actually just push down a half a megabyte worth of instruction set, and then that will hand off all of the heavy lifting back to the office cloud, and it will stream right from there.
And that's kind of key. We do a lot of work with Windows Intune, and one of the things you'll notice when you sign up for a Windows Intune account is no matter how many seats you buy, you only get 2 gigabytes of storage space in Azure to start with. So there's you put Office in there, and then it's half your storage for your Intune.
If you did both architectures of Office, that would be all your storage that you would have consumed. And you see here that I've got Office ready to be deployed. It's 461.3 kilobytes, less than half a meg, so you've still got all of your 2 gigabytes left to put all your LOB apps, so you don't have to worry about upsizing the storage. So now we can make this an available install to users, and when we flip over to the user machine here in a second, we'll be able to see first, again, half a megabyte worth of stuff that we're installing. I'll show what that looks like from a user standpoint. So now he's got this thing advertised to him as an available app to install. It's in the App Store, and he can install that. Now, one of the cool things with System Center 2012 and with Intune is that by default, the app model caches all the source locally, then runs from local cache, which in our case wouldn't be a good thing because it's going to cache a gigabyte worth of stuff before it starts executing.
It's not going to do that, though.
In this case, we don't need to worry about waiting. We can just cache that half a megabyte and then start the streaming session right from the Office 365 installer service. So we'll just go ahead and click install. That's only got to cache that half a megabyte file, which takes all of a couple seconds. So it's downloading software, but it's going to be very, very quickly finished because there we go. It's already ready to start installing because it only had to do that half a meg. Now it started integrated office.exe, and all of the streaming starts to run from the Office CDN. And within a minute of clicking install me Intune from the Intune application catalog, I can already start launching products directly from the start menu. So very, very fast using all of the cloud services that we have in tandem together, and I can get Office to run within a couple of minutes.
Up to back. If someone clicks on a Word document?
No. So you can do that with App B. I can publish apps before they're actually fully cached with App B, but with file associations, there's nothing to handle that. It will go to the previous install.
Good question, though.
All right. So I want to give away another BMW.
All right.
So what is the installation type that is temporary in nature that I can use on an unlimited number of PCs? Your hand came up first. I'm sorry? Office on demand? Yes, that's correct. You get a BMW.
Hey.
All right. So that's our buzzer beeping. Or it's time to wake up, maybe. All right, so I've got one more minute. I'm sorry, I'm going to go over a little bit in terms of update management. We're only pulling down the deltas, so we're going to look at what's there, and we're going to pull down the delta files. So you don't have to download the entire gigabyte worth of stuff. There's three different ways to configure updates. I can either have them automatically come from the cloud, I can point that same service to a local network share and have them check for my share for updates, looking at that v32.cab file I showed earlier, or I can disable updates altogether and have it wait for another setup to run like another software install. So updates I've got full control over. Basically, you have to stay within a year of being current. You can't go out of more than a year out of currency, but you've got full control over the updates that get applied. So that was our story in terms of everything. Hopefully Office deployment is much faster and easier. You don't have to wait for all the compat work or the installs, all that stuff, so it's Office deployment without the wait. A couple of next steps, go ahead and download the preview, get an account, look at the Office deployment tool, start playing with that with your deployment environments, and please, I've got a blog where I've written about 100 pages of content of everything we talked about today and more in terms of all the click-to-run based stuff, so please check that out. Thank you for being here. Here's a list of all the resources. If you want the deck, that should be uploaded today.
Yep. And the one that's missing from there is to sign up for a preview account, office.com/preview.
Yes. So thank you all for coming. That concludes our session, and we're 1 minute over, but thank you so much for being here today.
And don't forget your evals. Thanks very much.
Don't forget your evals.